They are officially the earliest stage client we've taken as measured by Ahrefs domain rating. I don't know if I've ever seen this. Is domain rating...
It was a 0.5, I think. I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, I didn't know it goes under one. Fractional domain rating. How do we begin to think about how to build a content strategy for them? And how does that differ from like an established client who's maybe like done some content as domain rating of something not 0.5? Maybe 40 and can rank for some things. You know, do you start with SEO? Do you start with non-SEO? How do you prioritize link building to get a domain rating to be able to rank? Do you need that to rank? Okay, today we want to talk about one of our new clients, and we're going to do the entire talking about them without naming them. And the reason this story is interesting is because they are officially the earliest stage client we've taken as measured by Ahrefs domain rating. I don't know if I've ever seen this. Is domain rating...
It was a 0.5, I think. I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, I didn't know it goes under one. Fractional domain rating, 0.5. When you Google their brand name, they don't show up. Random other stuff that has nothing to do with them shows up. And normally, that's against our client acceptance criteria. And obviously... We've been talking about in multiple episodes, our goal for this year is to try to get clients to last as long as possible to reduce churn. And so this is obviously very risky from a churn perspective. And yet we took them. So we want to talk about why we're taking a bet on this company and content strategy wise, what we're doing and our approach to a client that's this early with this low of a domain rating. And then ultimately focus on a key part of our strategy, which is this disruption story that we're actively writing for them now.
Yep, I don't have anything else to add to that. That was a great intro.
Thank you. End of episode. It's done. Hit subscribe. And then let's start with your perspective. I have mine. Let's start with your perspective on why did we... And we didn't even really argue about this. Or like discuss or debate this. Like, we took them despite them being ridiculously early. Oh, and another key aspect that we're definitely going to get into, they're also ridiculously technical. It is a development tool by developers for developers. This hits all the buttons of things we would not take. Oh my God, and there's another one. Reason why we wouldn't normally take this client. The founder on a sales call, we get on a call with the founder and he's like, by the way, I don't know if he's like, I am extremely like, I don't know what word he used, but I'm going to say like anal retentive about writing. And I need that things to be worded exactly that, which is usually another red flag of like the editing process is going to be a bear. So in your perspective, why do we take them?
One, I think people. So the point of contact on their side has been following us for a long time. And I believe he was part of our course. So super familiar with the process, super bought in. He basically said, if we don't work together, I don't know how I'm going to do content. Like, I'm so bought in on just working with you guys. So that's obviously a huge plus, is just someone who's bought into our process, familiar with everything that we do already, and really wants to work with us that badly. I think on our end, we kind of have to figure out a way to make it work. The other end is the product itself is different. It has very strong differentiators. It's almost like something new. It's kind of in a new category. So that leaves a lot of open content opportunities for us. And also it has very strong differentiation. There's no product like this in the market. And so I think from a writing perspective, that gives us a lot of things to write about.
Let me add some color to what you said. So what my memory is, the founder is the one that said, if we don't work with you guys, I don't know what we would do, right? That was my memory. God. Oh, it was like, the marketer?
Like normal.
I swear I think I'm right on that one. But anyway.
No, you're not.
Yeah. Like normal, Benji means my memory is so bad. But anyway, he also had been following us for a while, or maybe you already said that. And so that makes a difference. Like when people come to us and say, you know, I was just Googling, or like my friend told me to reach out to you guys, I get a little bit more like, okay, we're going to have to start from ground zero, versus people being like, I followed you guys for years, and finally, like, this is I'm at a company where it makes sense to work with you guys. Oh man, that, like, they just get it. They've been reading, they know what we do.
So something else that I remembered is they had attempted to do content on their own. I think after writing their first piece, they kind of realized that there's gaps in their strategy. And so that was also another reason for reaching out.
Yeah. So let's just explain what the piece, what the company does as best as possible. So we understand that the people reading this, listening, or watching on YouTube or podcasts are marketers primarily. So neither Benji and I are developers, but in order for us to get into the details and for this to make a lot more sense and understandable, you got to understand a little bit of what they do. So I'm going to try to not make this super technical. They are an app that, for lack of a better term.
Or library.
A library, sorry. I was just, they have a software solution that helps developers develop AI apps, basically. So they call them like LLM or large language model apps. In other words, let's use an example
before. I would just say, even simpler, I think it's a library. So like basically code that you can implement AI into an existing application, essentially. So AI functionality.
Yeah. So in terms of like the fit, right? Obviously now you have the ChatGPT, you know, kind of situation and some other, you know, competitors coming up, but you also have every software application under the sun is releasing some AI component, right? So for example, a software application that we use all the time, Zoom, has this Zoom meeting companion where it like transcribes and like gives you an AI written summary of your Zoom call. We actually use it. It's actually kind of convenient. And so there are developers that develop that. In order to develop that, you need your code, like Zoom writing that, needs to like talk to some AI or large language model, LLM, like a GPT 4.0 or whatever that's behind ChatGPT, right? The way that you interact, your code interacts with those large language models is via this concept of prompts. Just kind of like, and please, if there's anyone who's an actual developer, especially of LLMs, that's listening to this, I just want to preemptively apologize. I'm sure that they're like pulling their hair out at how much I'm mangling this. But for all of you marketers that don't know up from down on this, just pretend I'm right. So you need to like interact with prompts. Like you're literally, it's like language prompts. Like that's how these GPT things work. It takes in an input. Not just when you're using ChatGPT, which is like consumer facing, but like even when you're writing code that interacts with them. Those prompts, typically when you're writing code now, apparently the standard process is people like manage and handle these prompts in just like text documents, like a Google Doc will be like, here are different prompts. But when you're writing a big application,
not a Google Doc, like text editor or something like that.
Yeah, probably a text editor. Yeah, developers are like, Google Doc, who is this guy?
Zero chance they're writing code in Google Docs.
But the whole point is that prompts are not code, they're prompts. Is how people are treating them. This, our clients, sort of a core part of their thesis is, listen, if you're doing if you're writing some simple rinky-dink or like toy app or whatever, fine, you can do that. If you're writing like a robust application that is like, you know, prompting these large language models, the prompts are not static things. There's like code in the prompts, because the prompts are going to have variables. Like if user has such and such data, or the user of your app needs whatever, maybe the way you're prompting the LLM changes. So the prompts end up being like code. Like there's code in the prompts, right? There's variables in the prompts. So managing these prompts becomes a big deal. And, you know, long story long,
like if you need to update them, it becomes a huge challenge, because you have to go find that text edit file, edit it in there. It could break something in your code. There's all these challenges that come with it.
Yeah. So they're saying the standard process is like prompts are managed in some text document, which the argument for that is like non-developers can also like, you know, affect that. Then developers are writing code wherever they write code. And then if you change things in the code,
in Google Docs.
Google presentation, they're writing code. Please, if you're a developer, just skip this episode, right? Just like don't do this one. They're writing code. And then if the code changes, often the little details and the code pieces inside the prompts need to change. So there's like this kind of upstream, downstream effect. And managing the prompts gets unwieldy. You have all these different variations. Then you're looking between the code and and wherever the prompts live. Oh, am I using version 2.35 or whatever? And so their software library, et cetera, is built on Python. And if you're coding with these LLM apps in Python, which apparently a lot of people do, you can use it to sort of just manage prompts really nicely and easily inside your code. That's kind of what you need to understand. So, as Benji was saying, like, we're going back to, like, why did we take this? We did the churn episode. We talk about the churn episode on every other episode. That's like a big goal for us. This client has a lot of red flags from an early churn perspective. These early stage companies pivot all the time. They change strategies. They have some like blah, blah, blah funding drama that shows up. Like things happen, right? They hire some new marketer. That marketer wants to go in a different direction. And so you said like the main head of marketing has been following us for a while, was super bought in, said, I don't know what else we'll do. And I swear the founder also said that, or the founder actually said that. Then it's also just like really disruptive. They were very definitive and clear on what their product does and how it's better. And that to me was a rarity. Like you're nodding along. That to me was a rarity amongst these early stage companies we have talked to or even worked with in the past.
Even established companies have problems with this. Like even companies that have been around for 2 to 3 years have trouble explaining what their product is, why they're different, how they fit in the market, just the core positioning. And for them, at least from that initial call, it seemed very clear. They knew why their product existed. They knew who the competitors are, what they were competing against, their go-to-market strategy. They kind of had everything thought through already, which is rare.
And then they also said, yeah, like that content, there needs to be an education aspect to this. They're like, we have to do content one way or another. Oh, and then
that was another key thing though, is that when we asked how they were going to grow this company, they said this has to be a content play because it's a new category. No one's really searching for this. So we need to come up when people are searching for other alternatives or solutions or use cases. And we don't know any other marketing channel that's going to be able to drive growth for us like other than content.
Yep. And serendipitously, we happen to have a new strategist who's great, and he has like some software development background. Without him, it would be...
In Python, awful. I think, too.
Yeah, in Python. So in light of what you just said, right, there's not a ton of search fault. This is not someone selling a new accounting software. There's a million searches. So we signed, we've started with them. How do we begin to think about how to build a content strategy for them? And how does that differ from like an established client who's maybe like done some content, has domain rating of something not 0.5, maybe 40, and can rank for some things? You know, do you start with SEO? Do you start with non-SEO? How do you prioritize link building to get a domain rating to be able to rank? Do you need that to rank? Start with this where you want, and then I'll give my perspective of how we approach this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mixed strategy. So what we have done for them is we created something that we like to call a disruption story, which is a piece that basically announces their software and what they're doing differently. And it kind of just walks through the value props. And our job then after we produce that is to get that in front of people through paid social or communities or anything like that. That is meant to help drive links and drive more of the viral aspect, drive traffic initially. But then I do think it is a really good candidate for pain point SEO because it's a new category, there's not a lot of competition in this space. And so from a ranking standpoint, I actually think if we write a lot of articles that are going after keywords in the space, we'll have a pretty easy time ranking because there's just not a lot of companies writing on this topic at all yet. And so from a domain rating standpoint, I don't think it's going to hurt us too much. We've had a couple clients where we started, I would say, in the 20s. I know this is really early. So we started with the DR of, as I said, 0.5. And there was a list of things that I told the point of contact that they should do just in the early stages, just even get that domain rating starting to work. So, for example, things like going to startup directories and putting your site there just to start getting some backlinks to your site.
Oh, you told him to do that?
Yeah. He asked, while you guys are working on the first few pieces, is there anything that I should be doing or thinking about to help getting our domain rating just from 0.5 to even like 5 or 10? So I just thought back to things that we did in the very early days of Grow and Convert, like go to different startup directories. You can submit your site there, like Google directories.
We did that?
Yes. I did a lot of the manual stuff there.
Yeah, you did that. I don't remember.
What else did I say? Yeah, like just being on like Hacker News or some of those communities with links pointing back to your site, just all the kind of just like grueling manual work that you have to do in the very beginning. I just said there was like a list of maybe like 5 or 10 things. I forget exactly what I said, but gave him like a list of action items to do on that side. And then from there, I just think it's running our normal process with just some slight differences in terms of like more emphasis on this disruption story and seeing if we can try to make that thing go viral and having a very, controversial angle or something that would kind of tick off either their core audience or the audience behind it that's interested in this kind of stuff, to see if we can get a lot of traffic to that piece. And then I think it's just identifying low competition keywords that are high intent that we can go after. I think that's kind of how we're thinking through approaching this.
Yeah, so our literal like detail, the first piece is an alternatives piece. That's the piece that the head of marketing was kind of working on himself that we decided to do kind of in our way. I almost said properly, but he might actually be watching this series, so apologies if you're watching.
I mean, the first piece was decent. It just, there's differences in how we would approach the intro and pitching the company than I think what he had written in that first post.
Yeah, the writing details matter. Like, I mean, to toot our own horn, like, I mean, what we can tell from this company is these are all like really smart people. And he's been following Growing Convert for a while. The strategy was sound, but like the details matter. And he said, he was like, look, I'm not like, I want you guys to write this. Like I just have a sense that it's not right. And that goes to show, like, sometimes this is a little bit of a soapbox aside, but I think it's important. Sometimes when you're like, you know, these people gave this advice and I'm following it. So like, you know, I was doing the Growing Convert method or whatever, anything you're doing in something as complicated as like quote unquote marketing or content marketing, you can mess up in the details. Complicated things of any kind, you can mess up in the details. And if you don't write these pieces properly, then you may be like, but I did your guys' system and it's not converting or whatever. So anyway, that's my aside there. And then we're doing this disruption story that you're alluding to second. The idea behind these, now, we do these disruption stories for any client that we think it's appropriate. It's not just early domain clients. Is that
true?
Maybe that's not.
No, true. That's true. But I think the key thing for a disruption story to make sense and for us to want to do it is that there is some very strong differentiation in the way you think about solving a problem, the reason why your product exists. There's some strong stance you're taking. So for example, for ourselves, it would have been like a piece about us focusing on conversions where everyone's just focusing on traffic. Things like that, where you're an agency, you're taking a stance that's different from status quo. If you're a product company, you're taking a stance that's different from the way that other products are built or how everyone else is marketing other products. That's when it makes sense for us to want to do a disruption story.
And then the way we use a disruption story, it does not have any SEO keyword associated with it. We have tried in the past of like, you know, like after the fact shoving in some keyword, but that usually
it waters it down. It just doesn't make the piece as effective, I would say.
Yeah. The whole point of the disruption story is to promote in like the old school kind of community. Often we use like ads, like Twitter ad type places, for it to just like capture the attention of the target audience with a bold, provocative kind of take and get conversions and notoriety that way. And for a client like this, we're hoping also get some links, because any links at DR equals 0.5, any links is useful. And I wanted to take some time to like talk about, you know, architecting that disruption story a little bit. If we get into the details of it, you can tell from when I had to describe what this client does, it's just going to be too technical. But a key thing is we started outlining this on our side.
Well, maybe I'll ask this question, because I'm sure this is what most listeners want. It's like, how do you even come up with the idea of what the disruption story should be about?
Oh, yeah. A great question. It for us in our process, it comes about usually pretty easily, because even in the sales conversation, meaning when we have our first conversation with them, with any prospect, we ask at the beginning, can you tell us your founding story and why this company was created and why it exists, or this product? And we're looking for that at that moment. Why do we ask? Like, we have, that's like one of our first questions we ask them in a sales conversation. Why? Because we think, or at least my perspective, is that that story tells so much about the value prop, and just like, you understand the product, the market, the pain point it solves. You just like get this great foundation of understanding what is this product about, and then ultimately you can kind of start to guess in your own head at that point, like what kind of keywords and does SEO make sense, right? So, you know, just taking a random example, like if we were talking to like an Uber or something, right? There'd be some story around the difficulty of hailing a cab and blah, 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 and the unreliability. And so I thought, like, why couldn't we do this? Now we have smartphones, like that kind of thing. Like, we want that initial story. So we have that in our sales conversation. So like from that, when we get into the disruption story part, we usually have a decent idea by the time we get there of what that's going to be. And then after we've kicked off, we have a kickoff conversation with our content strategist, and our strategists aren't normally in our sales calls, and where we ask again, like, let's get to the like basics of the company, you know, like, what are you guys doing? What are you changing? What's the value props? And so they get a semblance of that as well. So I don't think it's hard.
I think in this specific scenario, I do think it came from either the initial sales call that we had, or then the one with the founder. I think we asked how he got started, and he was mentioning that they had another company and ended up pivoting. Again, a reason why we don't typically take early stage companies. But then it was through trying to sell that first iteration of the product that they came across this problem, when he was trying to actually build apps. And he just mentioned something that was very controversial, something around like prompts shouldn't be written by non-developers.
Here's another line, the line that I remember that's along the same lines, is this term, since AI explosion and GPT and all, and like everyone's adding that to their apps, like some AI thing, this term prompt engineering has showed up. Like prompt engineering, you have a prompt engineer, like someone at the company or whatever, that's like managing all the different prompts to like interact with whatever like large language model you're using. And he said, prompt engineering is just engineering, because it should be treated like code. It should be dealt with by coders, i.e. developers, and therefore, like, why do we need to say prompt engineering? It's just engineering and should be treated as such.
And to us, that stood out, because for anyone who's been following the AI craze for the last year or so, there's been a whole wave of people who have changed their titles to, I'm now a prompt engineer, like some marketer or someone that does not hold a development role. Now calls themselves a prompt engineer because they spend a lot of time on ChatGPT and they're trying to get these like $100,000, $200,000 jobs of these companies trying to hire prompt engineers. And his statement of prompt engineering is just engineering. It's actually not a role that should be held by non-developers. We thought there was something to that. That's definitely controversial. So when we heard that line, that's something that we wanted to dig into a little bit.
So that's the telltale of when we look for it. So in a big picture sense, we don't try to shove a disruption story onto every client's plate. Like if they have an app that maybe is like, maybe they have like a good business, but like we have one of our longest running clients that we've talked about in previous episodes. They have an app that frankly is not too differentiated. There's a lot of others that do similar things. We rank for a lot of keywords and just kind of like list our thing. And they are one of our most successful clients. They've been around forever. We've had amazing results for them with Painpoint SEO, but like there's no disruption story. They're not disrupting much. That's okay. But in this case, we saw that. And so then it comes time to writing that. And then I think in our first conversations with the founder, he had multiple strong takes like this. They don't necessarily need to be controversial, just very definitive, opinionative. And yes, like if it ruffles some feathers or whatever, there are people that disagree with it, even better, right? So we did the first like alternatives piece, which is like standard Painpoint SEO. Then we're like, we're going to do the disruption story. When you're architecting a disruption story, the writing of it has to be done extremely carefully. Because, and here's like a key thing. With Painpoint SEO, our standard SEO process, you'll notice when you're doing it, like a key part of it is you pick the keyword, you analyze the SERP. You'll notice that there's a bunch of kind of like not great pieces that are often ranking. They rank because the like domain is strong or like that domain has just been authoritative on that topic or whatever. Inevitably in our questionnaires, I see that I edit, our strategists are like, you know, we like analyze almost every result on page one and they're like, what is this? This is so bad. Like this is these things are just, they're not very good, but you can still rank. So what I'm trying to get at is with an SEO piece, if you get the keyword right and there's buying intent as per our Painpoint SEO process, and you just write like a good piece, but it doesn't have to be stellar or whatever, even if there's some shortcomings in your writing, if you manage to rank, it will perform. Like it'll get conversions. It may not get as many conversions as if you wrote it like really well, but it'll get some. Disruption story. The entire thing that thing is meant to do is to get people to share, to comment, to be like, this is really interesting. Email it around, tweet it. So your writing has to be spot on. You don't have as much room to just write kind of like a ho-hum B- type of piece.
Yeah, I mean, the whole piece is how solid the argumentation is. So that's why even when talking to the founder, when he's saying, I have these very strong beliefs, and then you question why, and he can back it up with like, this is how this fits in, and this is the reason behind this, that is needed. Like that crystal clear thinking is needed in order to write this disruption story.
Right. Yeah, that's actually a great point. I was going to start to get into like how we did some iterations on the outline, like our first iteration versus second, but that's a good place to kind of slow down for a second. If you are a founder or whatever leadership listening of a small company, a startup, and you want to do one of these, or an in-house marketer, or you have a client, you're like a vendor or whatever, and you want to do this, what Benji said is probably key. First step is what we said earlier, like, you should have a semblance of like, is this product kind of a Me Too product? And again, we have made successful engagements, very successful, ongoing with products that are not that differentiated. That's totally fine. It just is not appropriate for this disruption story. But like, does it have some really strong line in the sand, something it is disrupting, right? And that's number one. Number two, whoever is like behind that, usually a founder leadership, as Benji said, ask them why. Prompt engineering should be handled by engineers. Why? And C, does their response make sense to you? When you hear the response, does it intuitively say like, oh, if you don't understand the response or it sounds like BS, it probably is BS. You know what I mean? Like if they can't verbally in a conversation easily articulate to you why, like defend their strong stance, good luck trying to write that in a piece. Good luck getting that edited by them into an end product that's like coherent for someone to read in writing, right? Like if you asked us, you know, what are you guys disrupting in content marketing? Like within 1 second, we'd be able to tell you something like immediately, right? Everyone's going after this top of the funnel nonsense. It doesn't convert. Ours does. That's like a key part. So then the actual disruption story like process. We on our side, before we didn't, because we already did enough interviews to kind of get a sense of this like core thing that the product is disrupting, right? Like people managing these prompts outside of the code. It needs to be done in the code by coders. So we said, I was talking to the content strategist and he said, should we do a unique interview for this or what? And I said, you know what? Let's just try to like outline it ourselves and then see what the holes are in that outline. Side note, very good strategy for writing some of these kind of more provocative posts. Just outline it as best you can and you'll see, you're like, oh, I don't know how to do this, that what where it needs work. So he did. And then a key thing that we revised is his first outline was this thing about like, I'm going to grossly oversummarize. Developing LLM apps is a pain and it's too complicated for multiple reasons. And here's how we're changing it. That's not bad. Like compared to what
I think it's an angle that we've taken before. And that's probably where it came from is
like he heard yeah, one of like, our other.
Well, yeah. If we looked at one of our other disruption stories, that angle might make sense because it's a simpler product.
Yeah. I think for one of our clients, we have it up there. We have an entire case study on Rainforest QA on our site public. And I think we mentioned in that post, one of our stories of like, software QA is broken. Here's what we're doing to fix it. We're all encompassing. But we were looking at that and we're taking a bet here. I don't know the right answer, but I just want to walk people through how we think about this, the level of depth.
Probably important to say it's not written yet and it's not published yet, this piece that we're talking about. So we're still in, we've gone through the outline. We've pitched it to the client. They're on board. We haven't even started writing it yet. So this is just talking about the thinking to get to the idea that the client agreed with.
Yeah, there's an email in our inboxes this morning of like some back and forth where the client's giving their feedback. We said, you know what, for this one, that's too broad. And so we did a second iteration where we said, what would an outline look like of a piece and its argumentation if we just, and one of the bullet points in his first outline was this idea of like prompts should be managed in the code or whatever. And I said, can we just see via another outline? By the way, all of this was in a Slack DM. So just like if people are wondering like, oh, how much time you're spending, like this was an afternoon. I mean, our strategist is in Europe, so evening his time, you know, and he's sort of like outlining this. So this goes to show like you can get a lot of important work done. Like this is, and I'll talk about the larger implications, the disruption story, I think, for the brand. Like being able to articulate like what is truly innovative, disrupting of what we're doing is kind of like really important brand and marketing work that a lot of people don't do. They don't sit down and think about this. And we're doing it like in an afternoon, like, and it's not because they think it's too complicated. Oh, we got to sit down and do some offsite. We're going to do a company offsite and like think this through. Like, or you could just be like, if I had to write a 2000 word piece on this, can I just outline like what would the arguments be? And you elucidates a lot. You see the outline. And in V1, we were like, look, this isn't bad. We might just be able to publish this, but it feels like it's not as provocative as it like we thought it could have been based on the conversations with them. Can we ask it as a question, what does an outline look like if we just focus on that prompt should live in the code part? He did that. We look at it, we read it in Slack, and we're like, yes. Like, this is just more specific. It's more to the point. Like, let's do this. Sent it to the client, and as of the email that I saw this morning, they're like, yeah, like, we largely agree, and there's some, like, little nuances or whatever of wording and things that they wanted to mention. And so our plan here is to write this and promote it. I don't know. How are we going to promote this?
I haven't even fully thought through that yet. I'd imagine Twitter would probably be a good place for this. I don't know. Maybe testing Reddit again. We haven't tested Reddit in years. And side note, it was horrible. Horrible. Reddit advertising, probably the worst ad platform I've ever used in my entire life.
Why?
From a cost perspective, from a targeting perspective, from like, yeah, in an analytics perspective, they overcounted how many clicks that we got. It was just like not good.
Yeah, what I remember is like on the ad on the Reddit platform side, it was like
said we had like yeah, it said, oh, it's like you have 400 clicks, and then we look in analytics and it's like 10 actually made it to your site. Like, we're getting charged for like 400 clicks. And we're like, what is going on here?
Yeah. I think the other one is like if they or anyone on the team they're developers. I think they came out of YC or something. I think if they have Hacker News cred, I think testing this on Hacker News could potentially blow it up. You got to be careful with those places too, right? Because those, they can be brutal if they don't like it or something.
Yeah, but brutal is almost good on those platforms because the more controversy and like the more people that talk shit against you,
right?
I feel like it just drives up the engagement and how many clicks it gets.
So yeah, that's a tactic in our tool belt. This is what we're doing to keep the to hopefully get the results we need for this early stage client that we wouldn't normally take. Oh, I just remembered they also said this other line that made us feel good. They said, we want to see if we can just start to see some results and rankings or whatever in a year. And when I realized that their time frame was like our time frame, they're thinking a year time, I was like, okay, these people get it. And the disruption story, and maybe in like a part of another episode, if this does really well, we can like, you know, show some stats or share some stats or whatever.
Yeah, I'd love to do a follow-up video just kind of outlining how the piece was written, if they allow us to, because I think hearing this episode and hearing the initial thought process of how we came up with the idea, even how we kind of were thinking through a couple different ideas and narrowed into this one and then showed the finished product would be really interesting.
Yeah, we could do that. Yeah, and if you have any disruption story questions, just ask us in the comments, email, social media, and we can sort of discuss them on our follow-up call. If you like this video, don't forget to subscribe. You can also get the audio-only versions of these shows wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us at growandconvert.com/newsletter for any articles and updates for when these videos come out.